We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This, all they got to do is just throw it in and hit a player with the pass. They lob it in, ball deflected, and that'll do it. The Knicks are the second seed in the Eastern Conference as they get their 50th win of the season on a thriller here at Madison Square Garden.
Heroes abound. There are three of them right there. And Anobili providing offense and defense. What about Precious? Slamming and jamming. Good shot blocking as well.
So now the Knicks will wait and play this weekend against the winner of the Philly-Miami play-in game that will be played in Philadelphia this week.
And what about that? What a more dramatic, emphatic.
All right. For the 14th time in franchise history, the Knicks, they're a 50-win ball club. Wasn't easy. Today wasn't easy. I thought it would be a little bit easier, but I should know better. This team doesn't necessarily make it easy, but it was fun to watch for sure. So 14th time, as I mentioned, in franchise history to get to the 50-win plateau. They're going to be the number two seed in the Eastern Conference. It's the first time since the 12-13 season that they got to 50 wins. And I just think that number matters. I think it matters based on the ups and the downs. We've talked about the roller coaster of this season. 29-17 was the record when Randall and Anunoby got hurt in January the 27th. And the team figured out a way to go 21-15 in the next 36 games to get to the 50-win mark. So many big picture things I want to get to. So many smaller picture things regarding this game. But I think we need to, as a collective fan base, as you know, for many of us, me included, have been watching this team for many, many years now. 50 wins and the number two seed based on what we thought the team was going to be. And that changed. That changed. And that's part of the roller coaster. It changed many times throughout the year in terms of the early season ball club, the team after the trade, the team that ran roughshod over the NBA in January, the team with all the injuries. And then the team that's figured out a way now with some health and with some clarity regarding Julius Randle. And I think that matters. And I want to get to that in a little bit. I think they now are at a place where things are coming together. And I know, look, I don't know what was going on with the turnovers today. I thought the Bulls themselves, I mean, look, a lot of that's Alex Caruso. What do you have, 5 or 6 steals on the night, on the afternoon? He was incredibly aggressive. The Bulls made timely shot after timely shot. Credit to them. They have a lot of good shot makers, and their shot makers made some plays down the stretch and throughout this ball game to make this tough. I mean, the Knicks were able to pull this one out, but credit to the Bulls. They're going to be obviously in the playoffs. They'll be in the 9-10 matchup against the Hawks. It's a good team. It's a team that gives the Knicks some trouble. I thought Caruso, yes, Brunson ended up scoring a lot of points, but clearly he put his will and his grit, his imprint onto this game. But you step back for a second, and I talked about 21-15 since the Randall injury, and of course Anunoby going out, and then the extended absence for him. That is such, and the way they do it, and the evolution started almost immediately in terms of like how they were going to go about their business. But as the season moved along, and as Jalen Brunson got more comfortable, he got more comfortable with being the focus of the offense. And now he's gotten to the point where if you're putting two on the ball, the Knicks are going to get a good shot. They're not going to make them all, but they are going to get a good shot. And now you have a spacing situation that is going to make putting two on the ball much tougher. I think Josh Hart has gotten more comfortable as the outlet pass to make plays. Obviously, Hartenstein has been fantastic in that role, taking advantage of some of those four on threes that Jalen Brunson is creating. But that evolution as the season has moved along here in terms of how they're operating offensively is a testament to the IQ, the collective IQ of this ball club, and to the head coach and the coaching staff for trying to figure out a way to help this offense produce a top 10 level of production, despite the fact there is one elite playmaker, ball handler, scorer on this team, that's Jalen Brunson, and a lot of good players. But when you have a guy like Jalen Brunson, the Knicks within a season, and that to me speaks to the absolute high IQ of this ball club to be able to adjust in season with limited practice and figure out a way around Jalen Brunson to create a legitimately excellent offense. And this is going to be a bear of a team in the playoffs. And I know there is, I saw it on Twitter and the KFS chat, like there was a legitimate argument and it's valid and I understand it regarding where did you want the Knicks to be? Did you want them to lose this game and go down to the 3-6 and play Indiana as opposed to what happened, which is the 2 seed. And now you're playing the winner of the Heat and the 76ers. And I completely understand that sentiment. If you are basing it strictly on the opponent, I think that is the absolute right way of going about this, because I don't think you can make a great argument that in terms of the first round matchup, at least, that the Knicks would be better off in the two based on playing the Heat or the 76ers with the possibility of either getting, you know, the boogeyman in the Miami Heat or one of the top 15 offensive players the game's ever seen. And one of the end guy having a per minute basis, one of the greatest scoring seasons in the history of the NBA and Joel Embiid. So I completely understand that. With that said, I wanted 50. I wanted number two. I wanted 50 wins. And I wanted that number two seed. And there was no doubt in my mind that Tibbs and this team, that they were not going to go for that. Tibbs talked about playing through the finish line, and that's exactly what they did tonight. I don't know how many minutes DiVincenzo ended up finishing with, but it was over 50 for the first time in his career. Credit to him for continually, and listen, this is for a guy like him who's moving without the ball and completely blowing things up on the defensive end off the ball in terms of his ability as a rotation player and just getting in there, getting steals. Like it's a hard 50 minutes for him. So credit to him for obviously being there. I guess we should talk about, you know, what we saw today, just to sort of put a bow on, because this is the last regular season game. And I was thinking the other day of how enjoyable this season has been and just watching these games. And I talked about where this team started, where they are right now, and how fun that's been as someone who's like really like dives into the X's and O's and like trying to figure out like how this team's going to, without Randall, figure out a way to be a good offense, and watching them do it. It's been a complete joy. And I enjoy regular season basketball. And while, you know, I obviously watch every playoff game, I don't necessarily think I enjoy them in terms of the stress and the agita and the type of, you know, ball the Knicks play. I mean, things are tight. Things can get a little, you know, as they did today with the late game turnovers. Like the Knicks don't play, you know, a type of basketball that's going to provide a lot of stress-free moments. And I am completely setting the expectations that I'm going to be stressed out more times than not in the playoffs. But you obviously want those games. But I thought this regular season game, I'm going to try to enjoy it because, with the stakes being obviously lower and you just are just watching your favorite team play, team you've been rooting for many years, it's a fun thing. So I do want to like give the game its due, which is, you know, the Knicks pulling out a victory, a late game victory, an overtime victory against the Bulls. And I do want to shout out a couple of players that may get lost in the talk today. I thought Bojan Bogdanović in the fourth quarter made six incredibly big points. That one pull-up three that got them, I don't know if it tied the game or got them within a bucket or two, completely huge. I thought his minutes in the fourth quarter were big. I don't necessarily think the Knicks win the game or get to overtime without those points in that moment. And I thought the other guy that I do want to just make mention of, so Hartenstein gets to the 30-minute mark before the overtime starts. So the Knicks pull him because he's still going to be at that minutes threshold. They're not going to want to push him beyond that. So Achiuwa starts the overtime. Now, I don't know what the deal with Mitchell Robinson was or is necessarily. I think this probably, and we'll maybe get some clarity. And Kev, I know you're producing the festivities today. So just let me know if there's any Robinson injury stuff or this is strictly a matchup thing, which is sort of where my head is at right now regarding the Bulls going very small without Vucevic in the game and maybe not the right matchup for Robinson. And obviously you want to keep him away from the Vucevic has given him problems since for years now. So it could have been just a matchup situation regarding Achiuwa playing more the backup five in the second half. But I thought Achiuwa in the overtime period, he had two stops at the rim, had the putback, and that, listen, DeRozan is going to make that shot at the end more times than not, probably. But if you watch that game, I mean, how many times did the Knicks reach in and get a foul call when DeRozan or Kobe White would go to their like low pickup where you're trying to extend the ball low, try to get a reach in and an N1? Well, Achiuwa, I thought, did a great job of just keeping his hands high. They always say, show your hands. So you want the referee to know you are not trying to dig down. I thought he did a good job of keeping DeRozan off the line in that moment and try to make him make a shot over the top. DeRozan missed the shot again, completely makeable look, a shot he makes, as I said, probably more times than not, but I thought Achiuwa not getting called for that foul was massive there. And his minutes were obviously very important to help the Knicks pull this one out. The big story, of course, listen, this is like this in most games where then the Knicks are going to play and the Knicks are going to win. They're going to do it behind Jalen Brunson, who again got to the 40-point mark. It was not the most efficient performance, although he did, 40 points on 30 shots. Didn't start great. He really had a lot of trouble finishing in the paint against the Bulls early in this game. Turned that around. Only made one three, but got to the line 12 times, made 11 of them. 13 of 26 from two-point range. Again, the turnovers had four of them, which is uncharacteristic for him. Of course, that is many more than we're accustomed to him having. But again, that's, you got to sometimes credit the defense. And I thought the Bulls, in most of the occasions, sort of forced the Knicks into these turnovers. Obviously, the Josh Hart turnover late in the game, where he was, the Knicks had the lead and he's trying to kick it out to DiVincenzo in the right corners. It looked like he kind of lost the handle on the ball, turned it over. So obviously the turnovers were a big issue for the Knicks, but and we talk about the word inevitability with Jalen Brunson, and I don't know if there's any other better way to define it, to the point where he's scoring 40 and it kind of feels just like a ho-hum performance for him. And it kind of has been over the past several weeks. If you look at his, the per game averages and just what he's able to do on a night to night basis, an absolute monster offensively. He is, I think, going to, it just seems like the narrative is getting to the point where I think he's probably a favorite to be first team all NBA. He's got to get many votes in the MVP, maybe finishes fifth or fourth, depending on where, the votes go. But he has just had one of the great regular seasons in the history of the New York Knicks franchise. There's probably going to be, you're only going to come up with several other seasons offensively where you can look at the Knicks history and think a guy outperformed Jalen Brunson in terms of what Jalen's done this season. Of course, as I mentioned, kind of start this program, so much of it done without Julius Randle, who, let's not forget, was able to produce a lot of easier offense for Jalen, especially in the catch and shoot department, where Randall obviously has that, the gravity, the post-up ability, and has gotten really good at spraying the ball out. And then, and one of Brunson's great skills is his ability to relocate along the three-point line. So you lose that. So you lose some of the easy offense. And there was a point in, you know, as the Knicks in like February were trying to figure it out, there was a point where it was, at least for me, I was worried that we were going to see either Jalen go to a point where he's going to, you know, start struggling in the efficiency department or wear down a little bit. And again, credit to the Knicks for operating in a way where you're adding more elements to their offense in season. Again, that is very rare for a team to have the evolution offensively in terms of their, you know, the X's and O's, the strategy, the things you're trying to operate as drastically as the Knicks have changed from where they were to begin the year. And you change a little bit when you make the, obviously you make the trade, that's going to change things. And then you have the injuries and you have to completely almost not start from scratch, but you're having to figure out a way to add elements to make offense easier because you don't have the built-in gravitational force that Julius Randle is. So you have to figure out a way to sort of make that manufacture offense based on that. And it seemed like every game the Knicks would add a little bit. It was a Pacer game early when the Knicks had just, you know, the injuries that just happened. We're only talking about a couple of weeks after the injuries. And the first play is Brunson running a floppy action where, you know, it's an action I had not seen Jalen Brunson or any Knick really run in the Tibbs era. And they start the game with that to get Brunson to his left hand. He finishes. Actually, it might have been against the Grizzlies sort of early on, if I can remember the play correctly. But it was an early indication that the team was going to start expanding where this offense was going to try to generate points from. And then you have the Hartenstein part to this. And you can't talk about Jalen Brunson's performance as a player and not sort of link him, in my mind, to Hartenstein, because I don't think Jalen is going to, he's as good as he is. He's going to score. He's going to perform. He's going to put up points. But I think he needed someone to make things easier for him. And it was the Hartenstein pairing, to where you now have a guy to where if they put two on the ball, that ball's going to now either go to the outlet, which is going to be typically Josh Hart to try to make a play, or it's going to go to the short roll. And that's Hartenstein to try to make a play with an advantage. And, you know, remember the Laker game early on when the Knicks didn't have, obviously it was Achiuwa playing the power forward. You had a very, the Lakers were easily set up to sort of take away Brunson by putting two on the ball late in that game. The Knicks didn't have an answer based on the lack of shooting, based on the fact they really hadn't developed an opportunity to really take advantage of that in the two-man game. But that is completely changed now. Now the Knicks can consistently get good offense if the teams are going to put two on the ball, to the point where I don't know if it's a sound strategy. And I think with Brunson, you're going to have to, if you're trying to think of this, like, how do you defend him? I think varying coverages is probably your best way. But I think he's gotten to the point where putting two on the ball, and the Knicks ancillary pieces have gotten to the point where if they put two on the ball, he's going to make the quick pass, get the ball out, and now you can play with an advantage. And that's the thing that Tibbs has always talked about. It's not just trusting the pass, which is something that, you know, that is a tenet of this head coach. But I think the other part of it is like, trust the pass, but do it quickly, because the quicker you can get that ball out, then the defense is going to be in rotation. You're going to keep them there. And then at that point, you're just getting to the paint and you're just trying to win the closeout game, which I thought the Knicks did pretty well in this game. Based on how the Bulls were covering Brunson. A lot of it was just Caruso trying to battle his way. A lot of it was putting two on the ball, and the Knicks, I thought, did a good job of making the Bulls pay. And that's just been a big thing, and something the Knicks are going to have to continue as teams are going to try to figure out how to play Brunson. Now, we are going to, I'm sure, get a lot of questions based on the potential matchup against the 76ers or the Heat. Listen, we're going to have a while to sort of dissect the potential matchup between the one of those two ball clubs. But I think both of them are obviously going to present problems on their on either side of the ball. They're good teams. They're well coached. It's it's going to be a battle regardless. I think the Knicks, you can, and I thought the Pacers were going to give the Knicks problems. I think the Knicks are a worthy number two seed, but I think there is not a huge gap between two and the eighth seed in this conference. I think the Knicks should be favored, obviously, in the first round and potentially in the second round until they get to the potentially, hopefully, they get to the Celtics or whomever they play in the Eastern Conference Finals. The Knicks deserve to be favored in those series, but I do not think that the Knicks are going to go in there as overwhelming favorites. I think every one of these teams, Hawks and Bulls, put them aside here for a minute, despite the Bulls playing the Knicks really well today. I think every other one of these teams, including the Magic, obviously that would be things would have to go completely sideways for the Knicks to play the Magic in the playoffs. But I think that every one of these teams, especially the Heat and the 76ers, they have ways to sort of make things hard for the Knicks. Before we sort of move on to some of the out of town scoreboards and get to some of these games, which, NBA did a great job of getting the Eastern Conference in the 1 o'clock bracket. And then you have the 3:30 West games tipping off here. It was April 4th that we got the news that Julius Randle was going to miss the season. And I'm sure, maybe the players knew things were not looking good as we headed into that day before we got the official news on that. But I think, to me, that was an important part of this season, because I think if you're the Knicks and you're assuming that that Julius Randle is going to come back here, I think it's hard not to sort of, I don't think it's a preparation thing. I think you, as a coaching staff, as a team, you're always looking over your shoulder. Like, is this the day that Julius ramps it up and he gets to the point where he's going to come back, and you can sort of make it seem in your head that you're going to get Julius Randle back, and how much is he going to change things? Obviously he would change things drastically. There's so many things that you would have to change and revert back to if Julius Randle was going to return. But we got that tweet that he was not going to come back. The Knicks went 5-1 since that, or 6-1. Kev, you want to look that up for me? I think it's 5-1, but it might be 6-1 since the Randle news. Let me get that I can probably pull that up here. But I think it's like an important part of the season, because I think the team needed that clarity that they weren't going to get Julius Randle back. And it was the, so they beat the Kings, they lose to the Bulls, and then it's 5 wins after that. So 6-1 after the Julius Randle news that he was going to miss the rest of the season. And I don't think it's coincidental the team went 6-1 since that injury news and that clarity. I think it's an important part of the season. We all wanted Julius to come back. I think most of us did. I think if you're a unbiased basketball fan of this team, I think you can admit, even if you're not the biggest Julius Randle fan, that the ceiling of this team is probably a little bit higher if Randle was going to come back. But the fact that it was clear that he wasn't, I think that probably crystallized things for this team. And for a coaching staff that can maybe hone in on what this team is doing, knowing that they're not going to have to figure out a way to get Julius back into the mix before the playoffs and the adjustment that would present itself. So I think it's an important part here that we got the clarity on Julius. It wasn't the news we all wanted, but I think it was important for this team prior to the playoffs, with a couple of weeks before the playoffs, to get that news and then go 6-1 since then and beat good teams, beat the Bucks, beat the Celtics, obviously. And the Bulls are, a playing team here that you beat. And I think that's 6-1 to get to 21-15 after the injuries, to get to 50 wins, and to get to the number two seed. I think it was important to do it. I get the argument that they were better off at the 3-6. I think the Pacers do a lot of things that can make life very hard for the Knicks, and I wasn't loving that matchup either. But now you get your home court into the Eastern Conference Finals. I think that matters. I think it's a big deal. I think it's a big deal to get to 50 wins. It's the first time, as I mentioned, since 12-13. They were the number two seed that year. So it's been a while. 14th time in their franchise history to get to 50 wins. There was a point in the 90s where 50 wins was your floor. And that was, I know a lot of you watching or listening, you weren't around, you weren't alive, you don't remember those years, but there was an expectation in the 90s that they were going to win 50 plus games, get a 2 or 3 seed and compete for an Eastern Conference Finals, get to the finals every single year. That obviously has not been the case for years now, but I think I can confidently say that with this group, with this superstar and this head coach and the synergy with the front office, I think this team is set up for a run here where the expectation should be 50 wins for the next 2-3 years. Potentially pushing past that if you could figure out a way to improve this team. But I think the floor, if no other changes are made with who they have leading this ball club and Jalen Brunson, the floor should be 50 wins. And I think there's a potential here to go back to the expectations of those 90s teams led by Patrick Ewing, where 50 wins was the floor, was the expectation. And winning rounds in the playoffs and trying to compete for a championship year after year was the expectation. And I think that this team, this franchise, is pushing themselves into a category here where I think you can expect that over this next several years as this core, hopefully, can stay together. So with that, we had a big out-of-town scoreboards that we were all paying attention to.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, Knicks fans? Quick break to tell you about T-Squared Social, your new home for watching Knicks games and the new home of Knicks Film School Watch Parties. Located at 7 East 42nd Street, just a short walk from Grand Central, take it from me, this place has everything for a sports fan. This Wednesday, the Sixers and the Heat will battle it out in the play-in to earn the right to take on the Knicks in the first round. You can head to T-Squared and watch it on the biggest screen in New York City, as well as the other 7 play-in games, all week long. Interested in watching more than just basketball? Ask them to put the Yankees, the Mets, the Rangers, or the Islanders on one of their other dozen screens. As always, you can check out one of their golf simulators or play duck pin bowling or hit them up on one of their trivia nights. T-Squared Social, your number one place to watch the next big Knicks game. Get a free draft beer when you tell them Knicks Film School sent you. Visit tsquaredsocial.com for more information.
This out-of-town scoreboard is presented by T-Squared Social on 42nd Street, just a block away from Grand Central Terminal. I lived on 42nd between 8th and 9th for many years. So right by my old stomping grounds in the heart of Manhattan. There's several levels, cool sports leagues, and all the fun your friends and family can have. T-Squared Social is a new kind of dining and entertainment experience driven by Tiger and Timberlake, the T's of T-Squared Social. And if you go there and you say that KFS sent you, get a free draft beer on T-Squared for your first beer, and visit tsquaredsocial.com to learn more. So as I mentioned, every game in the East, all the playoff matchups, all the playoff relevant games, with the Knicks going overtime, made it a little bit easier to sort of come on here live and have things crystallized. The Hornets beat the Cavs. We'll start there, 120 to 110. Obviously locked in on the Knicks, didn't pay much attention to the comings and goings in that one, but it did seem like the Cavs benched their stars, or the stars that did play, Garland, Mobley, in the fourth quarter, and despite the fact that there was a chance for them to jump to the number two with the Bucks losing. So the Cavs, they're going to be the four seed, and they lose to the Hornets 120-110. The 76ers, they beat the Nets 107-86. Your 76ers, as we are all well aware now, they're going to be in the seven spot. The Pacers put up 157 against the Hawks, 157-115. The Pacers now going to be your six. The Heat win 118-103 against the Raptors. The Heat are going to be your eight. So it's the Heat and the 76ers in the matchup to play the Knicks. The winner plays the Knicks. And then the Magic, they beat the Bucks 113-82. Magic going to be the number five, the Bucks number three, because your New York Knicks are going to be the number two seed. And I think it's important to sit with that a little bit. I don't know what I had in terms of the over-under. I don't remember where I had the Knicks. I think I had them in the 4-5 matchup in the preseason predictions. Completely different team. It's almost irrelevant to sort of go back to that, what you thought of this Knicks team with RJ Barrett and Emmanuel Quickly. Remember those guys and that team, which feels like several years ago. You know, RJ with the big start to the year and the ups and downs, and then the trade and the emotion wrapped around that. And then as of January, I mean, it's like that month itself, and you go through there and you are playing like the best team in the NBA, and then you have the injuries, and you, as I have talked about, the evolution to try to figure out a way and manufacture offense, and you go 21-15, you figure out a way to scratch and claw to 50 wins. And the number two seed, it's going to go down as one of my favorite regular seasons that I can ever remember being a fan of this ball club. Roller coasters are, you know, they're enjoyable for a lot of people. For some people, you know, they're not. You want to get off the ride as soon as it starts, because it's just too much. But I think if you have the heart for it, this team is going to provide a lot of pride and enjoyment. And I think pride is probably, if I'm going to come up with a word to describe this regular season, this 50 win, number two seed in the playoffs season, prideful is probably the word that makes the most relevant sense to me, because I don't remember a time. You probably have to go back to those 90s teams that I've talked about, right? I can have this level of pride in a product that every single day is going to make you proud that you're a fan of them. And it starts with the head coach who, you know, he's who knows about the extension and how long with, you know, as he's in, you know, on the older side in terms of head coaches, how long is he going to be here? How long does he have to move his way up the ranks and coaching wins in Knicks history? But he's the one that set the expectation the day he came on board, set the expectation about defending and rebounding and trusting the pass. Talked about turnovers a lot that first press conference. So they failed that today. But despite that, despite today, low turnovers is a hallmark of this ball club. And the preparation, the team is always prepared. It starts with Tibbs. It starts with him. It's no secret that it's one of the things that if you play under him, you always talk about, all of his former players talk about his preparation, his work ethic, and that the Knicks have figured out a way to bring players that are going to sort of, okay. So Tibbs, we have, thanks Kev. Tibbs says, Mitch was unavailable on medical recommendation via Steve Popper on Twitter. So I do remember him on the bench through most of the game. Maybe that's a good sign. Now, I don't know if that is an injury management thing or if something came up during today's game that prompted the Knicks to hold him out for medical reasons. So maybe, Kev, if we get more clarity on that, just throw that in the chat. Thank you for making mention of the Mitch news. So obviously not a great sign. Now, I didn't see anything in this game that was alarming. There was a moment or two in the Knicks last game where Mitch sort of came down, and this has happened now several times since he's come back, where he's got a limp or his gait's off slightly, and he's clearly favoring something in his left foot, left ankle area. Was asked about it by Fred Katz after the last game, and Mitch told him it was basically nothing going on there, just a conditioning thing. But I think if you watched Mitch the last several games, there's been like one or two moments a game where it just doesn't look right. And it's usually after jumping or coming down, trying to get an offensive rebound. So we'll try to get more clarity on that for you all before we wrap up here regarding the Mitch news. Again, if you're the Knicks and you know you have, and I'm trying to think of the timeline here, was the Bucks game in doubt at that point when they decided to hold Mitch out? Because I'm thinking if you're going to try to play it safe with Mitch and something's just not right, and you know the three seed is your floor, maybe they decided just to not push it there. I don't know that. Just sort of guessing on in terms of like what their situation, with Mitch was, but they need him. They need him big time to be a force off the bench. Despite Achiuwa's minutes today, there's just times where his size is a big limitation. And I think offensively, while Achiuwa is a good offensive rebounder, he is Mitch is. And I'm not saying anything that you guys all don't know. He is one of the game's elite offensive rebounders and one of the best offensive rebounders in the history of the game on a, in terms of a percentage basis. So he is a dominant offensive rebounder. His defense, as Tibbs said the other night, he makes plays that other players can't make. He is an important part of this second unit. So hopefully whatever is happening here, there is enough time between today and when the Knicks kick off their first round matchup against either the Heat or the 76ers, and he can figure out a way to get himself into better shape. Because the Knicks are going to, if they're going to reach their ceiling, they're going to need him.
What's up, Knicks fans? Quick break to tell you about our new sponsor, Unified. Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode of the Knicks Film School Podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System. And if you haven't heard of the EE system yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're here in the Big Apple or at hundreds of other locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE system technology for yourself? Don't hesitate. Go to unifiedhealing.com/KFS to learn more and find a center near you. Again, that's unifiedhealing.com/KFS. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
Okay, so Kev puts in Chris Persiainen, deemed precautionary regarding Mitch. So thank you, Chris, for the color on that situation. So it looks like whatever the decision was for Mitchell Robinson regarding a medical recommendation to not play, precautionary. So that's good news on that front, because as I've just touched on, a big piece to this bench unit that doesn't have a ton of depth here. So they're going to need every one of their bench pieces to perform and perform at a high level. Again, Boyan, the minutes in the fourth quarter, the 6 points that he ended up scoring, big momentum changing buckets. He is just going to, and a lot of people have talked about, if you're not going to write him off, you think he could still help this team. There's going to be moments in the playoffs where the Knicks are going to be in the doldrums offensively, and he's going to make a couple of shots like he did today. That's going to juice this offense. And I didn't think on the defensive end, there's a couple of plays that he was picked on, but I thought he held up well defensively in this game. But offensively, he is a dynamite shooter who can do it from multiple angles and spots on the court, and is going to be an important part of this team. And of course, Deuce had some nice moments, despite not a ton of minutes. I thought the first half, I do want to mention this, there was a couple of plays where the ball pressure did get to Deuce a little bit, and the Knicks really couldn't get into a set. It's been a problem this year. Not something they're going to correct in terms of Deuce on the ball reps, but maybe playing with Hart and DiVincenzo, they can move some of those non-Brunson minutes to one of those two guys in terms of initiating offense in the 5 or 6 minutes that they're going to need when Jalen Brunson is not going to be playing, because we know it's going to be Jalen Brunson averaging close to 40 minutes in the playoffs if the Knicks are going to make a big run here. So a lot of this was a fitting way to end the regular season where you just had to grind it out. It was not a easy 50-win season, but it's a prideful one. There's been, you know, only 14 of them in the history of the franchise. So you take 50 wins, you take the number 2 seed, and you'd be proud of this team for getting there, despite so many reasons for them to say, yeah, we just don't have enough. And you know, the coach isn't going to let them think that. And we know their superstar is not going to let them think that, because whenever you have Jalen Brunson on the court, you have a chance. And to me, that is like, if you want to think of one moment or one thing of the season that you're going to take away this regular season, is that the Knicks have a guy where there's going to be 5 or 6 players in the league better than him. So most times when the Knicks take the floor, they're going to have the best player, and they're going to have the best player depending on who wins the Heat 76er playoffs play-in. I think you can make an argument based on where Joel Embiid is health-wise. I think if they play the Heat, the Knicks will have the best player. I think Embiid should scare anyone if they could beat the Heat, but I don't know if he's at necessarily his peak conditioning, peak health. So we'll see. But Jalen Brunson is going to be the next several years of his Knick career. Hopefully they extend him and it's 5, 6, 7 years and he retires a Knick. He's at a point now where he is going to give them a chance to get to this 50 win mark year after year, because he is that damn good. So with that, the out of town scoreboard wrapped up and everything sort of in line here in the Eastern Conference, I think we can get to some super chats. This is a big one. I think there's a reason to celebrate and be thankful and really appreciate what this team was able to do this year, because 50 wins in a season that started where it did and had all the ups and downs, the ebbs and flows, really, really impressive. And I can't wait to discuss it with all of you. So Kev, if you have the first super chat, it's Robert W. Cross leading us off here. Bring on Philly or bring on Miami. We are stomping their ass. Learn to compete, people. Listen, I get it. I get all the reasons why you want to play the Pacers. I understand it. There's a lack of playoff experience. You can even argue maybe there's in terms of like how the Pacers play, maybe that doesn't quite carry over. I'm not a believer in that necessarily. I think the Pacers are going to give teams problems in the playoffs with their offense, at least. Now, how they're going to defend is another question. But listen, if you want to get to the Eastern Conference Finals and you want to play Boston, you want to give them a run for their money and make them sweat, and if things break right, like get to a 6 or 7 game series against the Celtics, you should not be afraid of the 76ers or the Miami Heat, for that matter. I get the reasons why you're afraid of, maybe if not even afraid, if you're worried or concerned about either one of those matchups, because for different reasons, they present a lot of anxiety for a Knicks fan. I think the Heat is, it's obvious, right? They win last year. They have the Knicks and the Heat have, it doesn't seem like any series these two teams play, other than maybe some of the LeBron years, where it's clear there is a dominant team and it's going to be a stress-free series. These teams play tough, physical, aggressive, close, stressful minutes. Excuse me. And if the Knicks play the Heat, I have no doubt that is going to be what we're going to get. The Heat do things defensively, or did things defensively last time they played the Knicks, that made life very hard for Jalen Brunson. They were showing help early. They were really taking away some of his sight lines. Hayward Highsmith is a wonderful on-ball defender who gives Jalen Brunson some problems. The Heat, they won the last time these two teams played. I'm pulling up the box score just to get the Jalen Brunson line in that game. 5 of 18, 20 points. Did get to the line 10 times, but made life hard on him. So you know that there's going to be some things that Spoelstra is going to do that's going to make life a little challenging for Jalen Brunson. Now, that being said, he probably tried things last year when Jalen Brunson was unguardable for most of that series. So that's going to be an interesting battle. I think that the Heat, though, defensively, I think they might have a little more to go for in terms of strictly on the Jalen Brunson matchup than compared to last year. So on that specific point, I think there's reason to be a little bit concerned regarding the Heat potential matchup.